You are listening to MotivatingRadio.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Dream Big Revolution. I am Leanne Hilgers, and today I have a very special guest, Dr. Cheryl Edinburg. And Dr. Edinburg is the owner of the Tree of Life Birth Counseling and Wellness Center. She also has a nonprofit, Completely Fit, a Healthy Lifestyle. And you are not going to want to miss a minute of this show because, you know, on the Dream Big Revolution, we talk to ordinary people who do extraordinary things. And if you want to meet somebody who's had an extraordinary life, it is Dr. Cheryl Edinburg. Dr. Edinburg, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, I'm so happy that this has been a long time in the making, and I'm so happy that you were able to join us on the show. I am going to spell your name for everyone. So actually, why don't you spell your last name so everybody can find you?
Absolutely. My last name is spelled E, D as in David, I, N as in Nancy, B as in boy, Y-R-D, pronounced Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, not Edinburgh, yes, like Scotland, but Edinburgh.
Right. Edinburgh.
Good. Yes, I wanted to clarify that because I know right now everybody's on the internet and they're looking for you. So, Dr. Edinburgh, can you tell us a little bit? I know you have this amazing business and amazing nonprofit that we want to talk about, but I want to hear a little bit about your story. Tell me a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's a privilege and an honor to be able to share on today. It's amazing. So my name is Dr. Cheryl Edinburgh. Just to let you know, I am getting ready to celebrate 25 years of being happily married, a mother of three amazing young men, and a grandmother of 8 beautiful babies. So I'm super excited. And I
You're
am the
a
midwife.
Grandmother.
Yes. And I am the midwife. I was a midwife to one. And I am currently having another one in my care presently. So I'm super excited about that. But I will start out by saying that life. Yes. Super excited. I will start out by saying life started out very humble beginnings. Born and raised in poverty. Experienced some things in life that you shouldn't have to as a young child, but it also were things that made me who I am today. Surrounded by alcoholism, violence, of course, you come out of that kind of carrying some of that trauma with you. But I remember as a young girl thinking these things have got to be a joke. Like, this has got to be a nightmare. There has to be a better way of living life. And so I decided that I was going to do that. And of course, along the ways, my history repeated itself. I was a teen mom. At 15 years old, I found out I was pregnant. At 16 years old, I had my oldest son. In the face of people telling me that I should probably abort my child, or that I would never graduate, or I would never amount to anything. But I had something that was very dear to me, something that I felt like I could really take care of, something that I felt like I could utilize as a way of understanding how to have the kind of family that I know can be represented, right? And so I had my son, I took care of him all the way through high school and graduated, spent 1 year in college and realized that being a mother was more important than my education at the time. So I come back home, and when my son turned 5, I found myself pregnant again, married pretty young. And then by the time I'm 20 years old, I have 3 children, no education, no job. I'm in a marriage that is physically, emotionally, mentally, and sexually abusive. I'm lost. I don't know what to do. I don't have anything. But I do know that I did not want my children raised in an environment in which I said was unhealthy and dysfunctional. The very things that I grew up seeing around me were the very things I found myself surrounded by. So I decided to do something very bold and take my three children and myself to a shelter with absolutely nothing because I needed to start over. I needed a new fresh start. And where I was, I mean, I was thinking, what can be worse than this? Well, some shelters are. Fortunately, I was pretty smart and I had saved some money and I was able to get my children and I a place to stay. And along the way of me trying to restore and renew myself, I met my wonderful husband, which was the best thing ever. You know, they say a man that finds a wife finds a good thing, but this man truly, truly came in. And one of the things he asked me was, what had I wanted to do that I had not been able to? And that was to go back to school. And when I say I went to school, I went to school. I went from getting an associate's to a bachelor's to a master's to a doctorate. Learning is something I love. And I think a lot of it stems from me wanting to serve. So after getting my master's and doctorate in counseling, I decided that I wanted to, after some people had said, hey, you should really look at doing this, go into midwifery. That journey led to me from every place in city of Dallas, from starting out in Rockwall to going to Kaufman to going to Frisco to going to Burleson to going to Garland and right back to Kaufman. And that was a journey, a story for another time, of course. But just like anything in life, I found my challenges in it, but I pressed my way. I know it was not an option, right? So I kept pressing my way. I left corporate America in 2012. I left corporate America in 2012 because the ceiling was always there. It was never a ceiling that I needed to get to. It was just boom, you know? Hence me going to school so much. Cheryl, if you get a bachelor's, you can get this raise.
You know, no was not an option. And a lot of us are that way, but we're blocked. So tell me about what did you meet up with the ceiling? So did you feel like you couldn't get to the job that you were qualified for? Or what was the ceiling that you were coming across?
So it was like, you haven't been here long enough. Okay. Then after that, it's like, oh, you don't have the education. Okay. So I go get the education. Oh, you know, it was always something. And so when I say no is not an option, if you don't let me sit at your table, I'm going to go build me one. And that's what I did when I left corporate America in 2012. Uh-huh. So in 2012, when I realized like I've given everything I have to give and there's nothing being poured back into me, it was time for me to start pouring into myself and creating something for myself. And in essence, not realizing that I was actually starting to create things for my community, right? Uh-huh. For people that looked like me.
You mentioned, now you said you, at the same time, while you were trying to build a better life for you and your family, you were also making a life for your community. And you had mentioned that all along this whole time, you had a desire to serve and help people. And I think that's what ties a lot of us together. It's the whole nature of the Dream Big Revolution is you help yourself and help other people at the same time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in it, you know, there is a blessing in blessing others. You know, I have a heart to serve. Like, that's my love language, honestly. If I'm doing that, I feel great. And because I do it and it comes from a place within me, provisions are always made. You know, they may not come right away. They may not be overnight, but they do show up. And for that, I'm extremely grateful. And wherever I can serve and however I can serve, I'm going to continue to do so.
That's amazing. So what I liked about what you had said in the beginning, and sorry for taking you back and stopping you in mid-story, is you wanted to find a better way for you. And I see that you wanted to raise these wonderful men and these beautiful men that you had and your sons, and you wanted a better way. You were in the middle of it. How did you escape? Like, because most people, men and women, most people who are in abusive relationships, it takes them forever to escape. They go back. If they do escape, they go back, they go back, they go back. They get talked into going back. They return like 15 times, I think, is the average that most people return to an abusive relationship. It takes them a long time to figure out how a narcissist thinks, if they ever do. Then the next relationship is the same story. You know this, you're a counselor. Or there is, you know, it takes them a long time to figure out how a narcissist or a psychopath works. What was the trigger, or, you know, from your counseling background and education, very vast education, Dr. Edinburgh, what would you say to somebody who's in an abusive relationship and doesn't have the courage to get out like you did? You got out, which is amazing. Absolutely, yeah. Amazing. What could you say to them?
So there's so many elements, right? There's so much to look at. First and foremost, you look at why does a person stay versus, you know, how did you leave, right? I stayed because I had boys and felt like it was important for them to be raised by their father. But I also left because I had boys and I felt like it was important for them to understand what a true father really looked like, what a true husband really looked like. And so part of it also is setting some healthy boundaries with myself, not necessarily with him, but with myself, because we have to learn how to not just teach other people how to treat us, but we have to learn how to treat ourselves. And I wasn't treating myself like I loved myself. Hence, I let him treat me like he didn't love me either. It wasn't until I had these beautiful babies that gave me value for me to kind of start identifying with my own value and worth and decide that leaving, yes, I left initially for them, but staying gone was for me because I knew I was strong enough. I knew I was smart enough and I knew I could do it. And so a lot of times I tell people, like, mindset is important because the body won't go where the mind won't take it. So it's super important to have a mindset of who you are, the value, the worth. And then, you know, of course, the circumstances, right? Being smart, being strategic, being thoughtful, processing it out before you just jump into staying or going, you know, because it can be dangerous either way.
You are listening to MotivatingRadio.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Right. And I think a lot of people don't have the inner fortitude to save themselves. But you said, when you said the word teach, I was actually writing down the word teaching because you were teaching your sons what a relationship should look like so that they didn't have to repeat the same cycle, because they say these cycles repeat.
Or at least I was trying to get to a place where I was showing them what's not okay, right?
What was not okay.
Right. Because initially I was not showing them what a relationship should look like. I was in a relationship,
right,
in which I shouldn't have been in, but leaving showed them that I could be strong enough to do so and that I had a desire for something better. I never wanted my children to look and say, oh, well, dad's doing that, so that's okay to do. Or, oh, mom's taking it, so a woman should take it. You know, I wanted them to see, at least learn from my mistake. Like, look, I made a mistake and look, I'm getting myself out of it. So I taught them not to just take whatever. To have a voice, to have some power.
What an important lesson. And if you can't save yourself, then save your children.
Absolutely.
Okay, now back to your story. So where we left off, you found yourself in a shelter and your husband had said, you had met your husband and you recognized that this was going to be a better relationship. So somehow you must have learned what was a better relationship, what a better relationship looks like.
Right. So just kind of to backstep just a little bit, I was in a shelter. And while I was in the shelter, I found myself, after the adrenaline has calmed down, I felt myself sinking. Like, this would be the moment where people probably would go back. I saw myself in this room full of people. It was co-ed. Here I am, this young woman with these three little children, and I'm so busy, super focused on taking care of them and protecting them that if somebody could have hit me over my head, we were not in a safe space. And I'm sitting here going, what have I gotten my children into? We just left a home where they had food and clothing and the comforts, right? And I was sitting there thinking, I made a mistake. I shouldn't be here, you know? And I remember telling myself, just take some time. So once the kids were down that night, we were in a cot. We had cots, right? We were in a cot, and I was over in the cot, and I had my Bible, and I had my paper, and I had a pen. And I was like, Lord, you know, this is not what I want in a marriage, in a man. This is not how I want to present as a wife, because, of course, I learned how to do, you know, really unhealthy things, right? So I remember writing, and I was like, okay, so what do I want? And I could not, for the life of me, tell you at all. And I remember getting frustrated and just weeping and going, oh, my God, I'll never have what I don't know. So I was thinking, okay, let me write down all the things that I don't.
That was important. I want to repeat that. You'll never have what you don't know.
Exactly.
You'll never have what you don't know. That was profound.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
So you were frustrated because you didn't know that. Continue.
Right. So I wrote down all the things that I knew I did not want. Well,
that's the first place to start. You can identify what you don't want. Yes.
For me, it absolutely, yes. So I wrote down all the things that I did not want. And I said, well, let me see what the opposite of those things are. And I started writing down the, and I started writing down the opposite of those things. I would come up with things like, you know, I don't want someone to be an aggressive lover. Well, I want someone to be patient and kind and loving, right? I don't want someone that's selfish. Well, what that equated to me is I want someone that wants to spend family night playing games or watching movies or taking the boys out to eat or spending all Saturday at a football field, because my oldest son is the last one to play after flag football, right? I wanted someone that wanted to live life with me, to cherish life with me, to have fun with me, to explore with me, to travel with me, to grow with me, right? And so fast forward, out of the shelter, in my own apartment, but still looking for a job and struggling, I was an entrepreneur. I was the candy lady. So in my apartment, I sold chips and cookies and pickles and soda and hamburgers and hot wings and hot links, right? And that's how I made my money. And that's how I met my husband. He would come and buy food on his lunch break. And I had a little counter, and he would sit there and eat because he worked around the corner. He only had like 30 minutes or whatever. And we just chat, and we became friends, honestly. He was the first person that actually was like, I'll watch your kids while you go to work so you can get this job.
Amazing. And yes. Talk about, you had mentioned, sorry to interrupt you, but we had talked a minute ago about how serving others benefits you. You're serving others.
Mm-hmm.
You were literally serving other people food.
Mm-hmm.
And you met your husband.
Yep.
What a great story.
As the candy lady. Yep. Mm-hmm. And what's
funny candy lady.
As the candy lady. But what's interesting is that we also have this ability to self-sabotage. When we've been around destruction for so long, sometimes we find ourselves going back down that road. So when my husband now approached me to start dating, I was like, uh-uh. He was too what I needed. Straight-laced, honest, spoke life into you. All the things I said I wanted, right, on my little piece of paper. But none of the things I had been exposed to, none of the things that I ever, you know, it was like an allergic reaction. I was like, nope.
So did you not recognize it, or did you think, so why were you no? Tell us why you were no.
Absolutely, because he was everything that I had never experienced before. He was, to be quite honest with you, I'll just be real frank. I said, he's square.
Right. He's too nerdy. Is that what there's not enough?
No.
Because these narcissists and psychopaths, and, and by the way, they're men and women. We're not
picking
on men here. Yes, they're men and women that are narcissists, psychopaths, sociopaths, and they're charming. They're intelligent. Mm-hmm. They're calculating. They're manipulative. Mm-hmm. They can work a room. They're brilliant. They draw in a crowd. They're the life of the party. And then you get somebody who doesn't need that attention or constant attention.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't seem to have they don't have the draw. I have a friend that says go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that all that pizzazz is that external
pizzazz.
Person, right? But here's the thing.
Yes.
What is that inner man? What is that inner man? And so for me, what drew me to him was his inner man. Because after a while, all of that pizzazz didn't matter anymore because he spoke to my heart. He spoke to my mind.
The pizzazz is all about them. So narcissists, psychopaths, it's all about them and what benefits them and all that attention that they want is all about them. I have a friend that when she picks a man, she'll say, I don't like him. He doesn't got game. And I'm like, okay, so 2 weeks from now, you're going to be crying on my doorstep going, oh, he's playing games. What do you want? Do you want games? Do you not want games? So, yes. Okay, so you didn't recognize, some part of you must have recognized because you stuck with them and you became friends and you built a trust and so some part of you must have been drawn to that, but in the beginning you're going, oh, this is too stable, too boring.
It wasn't what I had been used to, and when I first met
it's
him,
not
though,
what you yes
had been used to. But when I first met him, I admitted that he's a great guy.
And
I can admit that. He's a great guy. He just wasn't the kind of guy that I was used to.
Right, because everything you knew was narcissist, psychopath, sociopath, you know, whatever personality type. I'm sure you can list them better than me, borderline, whatever they were, crazy and abusive. And that's what you knew, and that's what you recognized, and that's what felt familiar.
Well, yeah, and so I won't diagnose him one way or the other, but all of the characteristics of a narcissist, he did possess, right? And some of that I enjoyed. Let's be clear. We all are on the narcissistic spectrum. We all are, right? So all of that love bombing, I loved it.
Who doesn't love that?
Exactly. So
right.
So some of what he was giving me, I was wanting, hence why I was there in the first place. But what he did not possess was what my inner woman needed, right? So my child was really big on all of that. Oh, all this pizzazz and these big things and these, you know, the trips and the fancy stuff and all the attention and the fact that, oh, my man is the man. Like, all that was cute for the little girl in me. But the adult in me was like, I need someone that's long-lasting, that's standing, that if something happened to me, he would take care of me, that he would love me, that he would cherish me, that he would take care of my children, that, you know, I didn't have to worry about my safety.
Your right? safety.
I didn't have to worry about feeling like I was being taken advantage of or for granted, right? I didn't have to worry about a black eye or a busted lip. Like, let's really get to the heart of what looked back at me when I realized, like, this is what you're staying for. You're staying for your eye to be closed, for your stomach to be kicked in, for you to be up crying all night long because you know not where he is or who he's with. All of that I was used to, right?
And you You get used to turning a blind eye and showing, turning a blind eye to it and having to put on a face when you go in public.
Absolutely.
That,
but not necessarily.
So, because it...
Because honestly, some people do. I never did. Mm-hmm.
Some people do. You did not.
Some people do turn a blind eye. No, ma'am. I knew this was wrong. And I would tell people, yeah, look. Like, no, I never, ever, ever was delusional about what was happening at all. How to get out of what was happening.
Okay.
What's the struggle?
The struggle. Okay, so you mentioned love bombing. So not everybody knows the cycle that these people go on. So there's love bombing where they just shower you with attention and gifts and then there's the other. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for what I did, you know, for what happened. They don't necessarily say what I did because they don't take responsibility. I'm so sorry. And then there's the other side. Could you elaborate on it better than me? Of the cycles?
Yeah, I mean, there's a cycle of, and sometimes it's look at what you made me do.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's not forget that one. That's the biggest one. It's, look at what you made me do. You know I love you. If only you would have. If only you wouldn't have been saying those things, then I wouldn't have smacked
you.
You're
not good enough.
Right? Mm. But then there's also the, you know I love you with everything in me. I can't live without you. You're the best thing ever. You know, we got a good thing going on here. People are jealous. Don't listen to them. You know, I'm sorry you made me hurt you. You know, I can't live without you. If you leave, I'll die. I'll kill myself. You know, it's a crazy cycle. And some of that, because you're wanting so bad to understand why you're hurting me, you'll accept it.
You are listening to motivatingradio.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
Or you want so bad for the bad feelings to be gone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it just feels so good to have, it's such a relief to have a nice person.
Absolutely. The monster isn't here today. Yay.
Yes. You walk around on eggshells until the monster, because you know the monster's coming back.
Or you let them turn you into a monster. So my story is a story, right? So I wasn't a victim. Let's be clear. I was never a victim. He fought me. I fought him back harder. But that was turning me into someone I didn't want to be, right? But I do want to go back real quick and just say, like I said, sometimes people stay because they don't have the resources. Sometimes people stay because they don't know what the resources are. From the moment when things started to spiral in my life, being a teen mom, right? There was no one I can go to. There was no one that told me, you know what? Listen, this is a part of your life. There's other parts. You can go on. You can do what you decide to do with your life. No one was there to tell me that. Then when I was suicidal, right? After my dad committed suicide, shot himself in the head in front of me. No one was there to say, that's not your fault. That unfortunately, your father's pain was so painful that nothing would have stopped it. There was nothing you could have done. Stop blaming yourself. Let go of the guilt and the suicidal ideations. Let's work on those. Let's work through those, you know? And then after being beat down so much, no one said, Cheryl, where's your self-worth and your self-value, right? I think that my continuing to push forward was more about being angry about what it meant to let go and to stop, that I just kept going until I got to a place where I sat at the foot of my husband's mother. And she had this beautiful way of pouring into me. I would go over there for him to cut my hair, and she'd say, "Oh, that's your crown of glory. You look so great with your hair, you know, that length." I'm looking at her like, "Lady, you know, I don't really know you, and you're being so nice to me, you know." I'd go over, and she had gotten sick, and so I would go over to, like, rub her scab and her feet. Remember, there's a blessing in blessing others. When I would do that, unbeknownst to me, because no one took the time out to do it, she was pouring into me by talking to me about the Bible. In layman's terms, though, not the thee, though, thou, but did you know that you are the head and not the tail, above and not beneath? No one should ever make you feel less than you are, right? It was people like that that started to show up in my life that showed me that it is important for us to be available for people. Hence me becoming a therapist.
Let's talk a little about the guilt, and let's talk about the resources and what people can do when they're in that when they're in the situation, and why you do what you do.
Absolutely. So there's two sisters, guilt and shame, right? Guilt says that I've done something wrong. Shame says that I am something wrong or bad, right?
And when you're in, sorry to interrupt you, but when you're in an abusive relationship, they use that guilt and shame constantly. That is their best tools because they're effective. And now put it together with you are in mourning over your dad and grief. One of the stages of grief, and one of the big stages is grief is guilt,
depression,
and regret and depression.
Yep.
Okay, continue. Please continue. Sorry to interrupt.
And so, no worries. And so after being with my mother-in-law and her pouring into me, I'm so grateful that she was left here for a year. And for a year, I got to know one of the most amazing women on this side of heaven. Like, I've never met anyone before or anyone after, but I'm grateful that I had the opportunity and the privilege because it changed me. It changed who I was. It changed how I started to see people, because you wouldn't believe it, but I did not like people. I did not. And now all I want to do is serve people. And so what I started to do is the guilt and the shame started to dissipate as I started to learn how to love myself, value myself, identify, accept, and appreciate my worth, and walk in it, right? So walking in love for myself meant stop self-sabotaging and stop self-harming. And so I'd find myself praying, meditating, doing yoga, listening to affirmations. I found myself listening to sound bowls, doing sound bowl meditation. I found myself sitting around groups of women, inviting groups of women to sit around me. I found myself wanting to pour back into the community, visiting the Buckner's Children's Home to take them gifts and taking my children with me so they can see that there are others that are less fortunate than them. But it's our job, because we have been blessed to be at a different place than where we were in that shelter, to go give back, right? And so everything I do is about giving back, even with therapy. I didn't have anybody that looked like me. First of all, I didn't have anybody that looked at me and talked about therapy. So I didn't have anybody that looked like me that actually was a therapist or anything else, right? And so knowing that there is a definite need for that, to even have a comfort level to even begin to approach the idea of being in therapy, right? And then to get rid of these ideas that therapy is about something being wrong with you. No. You know, therapy is preventative. It can be interventive, but it definitely can be preventative. It can be about helping you on this course of life that you want to be on and stay, having an accountability, right? a place where you can be real, raw, and check your own self, right?
Be healthy, so, become better.
Yes, mind, body, and spirit. And in through my therapy, I was able to identify a huge need in the community that I didn't have coming up, right? And even as a teen mom, I struggled with how I was dealt and handled when I went to have my son. You know, I felt so shameful because I was made to feel ashamed. I was yes. treated subpar. I was snatched on and spoken to and at, you know. I was just treated really harshly in a very vulnerable and delicate time of my life. And so now, whether you're 15 or 47, I feel like the care you should receive during that time should be loving and kind and supportive, and it should be informed, and it should be a partnership. And that's what I try to provide to my mamas.
That should be how we're treated all the time in, in every situation, not just in healthcare, but in, you know, in every situation. And I know that's, you know, not realistic, but that's not how the world necessarily is. But you had an amazing line that I'm going to quote you, Dr. Edinburgh. Let me just read the show description is for your show, and your show is Elevate with Dr. Edinburgh. So let me just read the show description for everyone. Ask us about relationships, ask us about children. We talk about health and well-being. This is about the treatment of people. There are individuals who are abused mentally, physically, and emotionally by a system that was designed to heal. That's the quote. There are people who are abused mentally, physically, and emotionally by a system that was designed to heal. Be more, want more, fight for more. No topic is off limit. No questions can't be asked. This is your safe place. So yes, why did you say that? I thought it was so profound when we wrote that, I typed it in, you said it. There's people being abused by a system that was designed to heal. And this is where this stems from, what you were saying before about you were talked at, you were treated marginally. And so where did you go with this?
You are listening to MotivatingRadio.com. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.
So at the time, being 16 years old, I had no thoughts about it whatsoever, right? But as I move through life and I see it in places like where I worked, you know, it was evident that it's evident, right? We have racial disparities everywhere, you know? Even with people that come, whether it's therapy or midwifery care, people that come in and they talk about the things that they've experienced and why they're looking for a woman of color that's going to be their midwife or their therapist because they've been harmed. They've been hurt by others, and they're trying to look for a safe space, you know? And we have all of these systems in place that says we're here to serve and to help and to take care of. But does that depend on what exactly? My economics? Does it depend on race? What does that depend on? Because we do know that there is definitely a difference. We feel it. We see it. We hear it. We know it, right? And so, again, if there is not a table that I can sit at, I am okay with pulling out some tools and building one. And so what I've decided to, the Tree of Life, absolutely. The Tree of Life Birth Counseling and Wellness Center is a for-profit in which we take care of mental and maternal wellness. We walk with our clients. We're on a journey. Like, it literally feels like it becomes family, right? I also saw a need that my for-profit wasn't providing, and that was to be able to assist people regardless of their ability to pay, right? And so my nonprofit, A Completely Fit, A Healthy Lifestyle, was actually established in 2016. It was established in 2016, I want to say, because I did not know, but maybe I did, that it would be such a time as this.
I love your analogy, what you say, if I don't have a table, I will build a table. What did you build?
So the Tree of Life Birth Counseling and Wellness Center, it is a company that allows for mental and maternal wellness. So we work with clients, we work with families, we work with organizations in which we walk with families. We are on a journey with them, and it is a blessing. I also realized that we didn't make room for certain things, and we didn't take into consideration not everyone can afford what we have to offer. I knew I couldn't. So in 2016, I actually established Completely Fit, A Healthy Lifestyle. I was not sure at the time why I was doing it. Maybe I wasn't sure. But it is for such a time as this, because now that the Tree of Life is up and going and it is established well, it's time for me to now give back again in a different kind of way, in which regardless of whether a person can afford it or not, they do deserve quality maternal care. And so
you say they, who's they? Can anybody come see you?
So on our nonprofit is for those, regardless of whether they can pay to come in. Those are people that are socioeconomically in a low socioeconomic state. So no, not just anyone. So we have two pockets, like, right? So the Tree of Life Birth Counseling and Wellness Center is for those who can be in a for-profit space. And the non-for-profit space is for those that are low socioeconomic, right? They need a little help for spaces that I needed when
right.
I was looking for a way out.
Now, when you, back in the beginning of our discussion, you said you were looking for a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the better way. This is obviously the better
yeah.
way, because
yes,
people
ma'am.
Are treated with dignity and
yes.
and they're cared for and it's safe.
Yes. Dignity, respect, it's safe, and love.
And love.
And love.
And so where can the number one thing everybody needs...
mm-hmm.
Right? Everybody mm-hmm. needs, who doesn't have too much of that? So where
right.
can people find you? Where can people find you?
Absolutely. Completely Fit, it's under wearecompletelyfit.org. And the Tree of Life is under the Tree of Life Wellness Center.com.
Tree
I
of
can
Life
also be...
Wellness Center.com. Go ahead.
Yes. And I can also be reached at Tree of Life BCW on Instagram. And
Tree of Life BCW on Instagram. Kate?
Yes, ma'am.
As well as, where else can they find you?
As well as Completely Fit _midwifery_care on Instagram.
Completely Fit _midwifery_care on
uh-huh.
Instagram.
On Instagram.
Okay.
Yes.
Give us your web addresses one more time, because that was a lot of notes for people to take.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Tree of Life is listed under the Tree of Life Wellness Center.com. And our nonprofit, Completely Fit, is under wearecompletelyfit.org.
Now, your Tree of Life is birth, it's counseling, and it's wellness. You do yoga. You do all sorts of stuff there. What kind of stuff do you do there?
So we do behavioral mental health. We work with couples 18 and older. We also do aesthetic work. We do fitness, nutrition. We also do midwifery care, prenatal, birth, labor, and postpartum. We also do, as you mentioned, yoga, meditation, breath, exercise, and works. There is a ton. You know, there's a ton.
There's a ton of stuff that you do. You have a lot of skills. You're very skilled. You're very highly trained. And so it's not just for new moms or moms-to-be. It's huge. And your new show is Elevate with Dr. Edinburgh, and it's spelled E-D-I-N-B-Y-R-D.
Absolutely.
Good, I got
and
it
I
right.
And I do want to share.
And yes. Go ahead.
And I do want to share that at the Tree of Life, it's not just me. So as I said before, my goal was to give back. And so as a licensed professional counselor supervisor, I also have the privilege of supervising. And so I have two other therapists that work under the Tree of Life, under their own entity, but in contracted work. So they're there to help as well. I also have, under my midwifery, I am a preceptor. So I do have a student midwife that works under me. So when we have our clinic days, she's there along with Latoya Horn, who is our doula, Diana Blevins, who is our student midwife and birth assist, Sarah Williams, who is our office manager that keeps us all on track. It's not behind me are great, great women. On the side of me, let me say, are great, great women. So I'm not doing this by myself.
Just amazing. You have built the most amazing, safe place for people to go. Dr. Edinburgh, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for connecting
thank
with
you.
Us today. You are an incredible person.
Thank
you. You are the most beautiful person, and you have... Thank you for sharing your story with us, because I am sure it is going to help people. And we're going to be seeing a lot more of Dr. Edinburgh. Join us on Elevate with Dr. Edinburgh, and join us again on the Dream Big Revolution. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.
Listening, this is Motivating Radio. Remember to like, share, and subscribe.